This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right. Thanks for joining us. Hour two as we roll along. Good Tuesday to you. Well, Tuesday means, we got top five, bottom five coming up in hour number three. But we got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up this hour. Also, LeVon Kirkland, former Pittsburgh Steeler, is going to join us. Also, former Clemson Tiger. He was on the Clemson defense in my freshman year when I was at the University of South Carolina and really put a whipping on the Gamecocks. But he is a fantastic Steeler player on the defensive side of the ball in the 90s, was part of the Steelers Super Bowl 30 team that lost to the Dallas Cowboys, which they did a good job against Dallas. They really did. They played the defense really stepped up, and it was like one of those games where Dallas scored a little early and then struggled to score the rest of the way. And it was Neil O'Donnell throwing those interceptions that sort of sealed the win, a 10-point win for the Cowboys. But LeVon Kirkland's going to join us. We'll talk about his career and also where the modern NFL, what he thinks about that. He's also a candidate for the College Football Hall of Fame. He had an outstanding career at Clemson. When I wanted to go down south to school for college football. I grew up in New Hampshire, and we didn't have college football, basically, growing up. It's not a college football area. But I loved college football as a kid. I loved Keith Jackson. I just loved the pageantry of the sport. And I wanted to go to a southern-based school because it was warmer, and I also liked the atmosphere. And I remember my freshman year at South Carolina, I was really psyched for the game. I was obviously South Carolina Clemson. I'm a freshman. I'm all kind of bought into the school and bought into the pride. And I'm doing basically what young people do. I'm tailgating before the game. But Clemson came in, and I'll never forget, the energy of the stadium was electric. It was probably the loudest crowd I'd ever been a part of. Everyone was energized for it. And the South Carolina team came out on the field, and everybody went berserk because they played 2001, and it was just it's a great entrance. And I think that euphoria lasted 10 seconds because Clemson went on to win 45-0. 45-0 on ESPN. It was on ESPN too. So like my friends all saw this like complete and utter shellacking by Clemson at the time. But we talk about sports rivalries a lot, and no one is ever going to put Clemson, South Carolina on the upper echelon of sports rivalries, but that's why they're personal. You know, every year it's still the one game that I love and I pay attention to because it's the rivalry of my school, but it is also, it's just a reminder how deep traditions go. And even if you have a career like a guy like LeVon Kirkland, who we'll talk to later on, you can still remember those moments as some of the best moments of your life is when the time you beat the rival when you were on the football field. We'll continue.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the Tuesday edition of the good, the bad, and the dumb. Don't forget, LeVon Kirkland will join us coming up later on in this hour. Former Pittsburgh Steeler, former Clemson Tiger. Played for a couple of other teams, but what the heck. I'm always going to remember him as a Steeler. Was some great, great defenses in the 90s. All right, let's get to the good of the day.
Good of the day. Now, this is the good of the day where, I'm holding, there's a little bit, maybe a bad or dumb attached to it.
Right.
But for right now, for what we think, it's good.
Okay.
And that's NASA firing a satellite at an asteroid.
They hit it, right?
They hit it. They hit it square on the nose, I guess. I don't know. I don't know what part of the asteroid they were aiming for. But listen, this thing was 5, 6, 7 million miles away, and they did this at 14,000 miles per hour.
Who's running the controls? Like, is it a computer, or is there somebody in a capsule going, I got it, here we go.
That's a great question. Yeah. I can just see a guy with a joystick, an Atari 2600 joystick.
Exactly.
And a power button just to keep hitting, the jets, to fire the
when
burners.
You played Asteroids, the worst thing was when you hit thrust to get out of the situation
and you were flying
all over the place. You just couldn't
control it.
You couldn't control it. You were just a sitting duck after that. You just were done. Like, it was better to just stay stationary, fire at all the asteroids, but the moment you escaped that center point of asteroids, you were finished.
Yeah.
You were the only matter of time.
So, technically, we hit this asteroid that was it's considered a non-life-threatening asteroid or non-threatening asteroid or whatever.
So why did they hit it?
They did it to, I guess, as a, I can't say practice, but it was their attempt at the Earth's defense systems, I guess, if an asteroid is coming our way.
Oh, in case an asteroid is coming, they could probably break it.
But You know, there's two things that I keep in the back of my mind. One, this asteroid wasn't in our harm's way, right? So, I mean, it wasn't in our orbit. We weren't ever going to hit it. I mean, maybe a million years from now it might be an issue, but it wasn't going to bother us. And what their hope is that they hit it enough to push it out of its current orbit into another orbit.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
So part of me thinks, it's like, okay, well, did that do something? You put it into a different orbit.
When Deep Impact and Armageddon came out in the 90s, I wonder, because I don't know much about this kind of science stuff, did they talk to like NASA or people that
I
said,
would hope so.
Would we ever need to send drillers into space to drill a hole and put a bomb? Or is that like completely and utterly implausible? Like we would never do that. If an asteroid's coming, we're dead. Like we're not going to send a drill team. That would, the logistics of that are just physically impossible. Or did Hollywood go, we don't care, we love the story, so screw it?
Because there's got to be a way to.
I've always wondered, even after those movies came out, I'm like, what would we do if an asteroid was heading? How would we do it?
Like, and the one thing that stuck in my mind when I heard about this story and what they were doing, and you know, it's been a long time coming. The only thing that ever reminded me was, and remember that scene in Armageddon where the main scientist guy, right, was like saying, you know, like we can, let's fire a nuke at it.
Right, that's right.
What the general said. Let's just fire a nuke at it and blast it out of the sky. We got pretty powerful nukes. And he's like, with all due respect, sir, you wouldn't throw a basketball at a semi-truck moving at you.
Right. So you have to blow it from within.
Yeah, but that's what part of me was thinking here, too, was that, you know, did we just do that? Because this small little satellite, or was it just practice of like, hey, can we actually hit a moving target out in space?
Yeah, all right.
Because I don't know if this satellite would be enough to deter it if it was on a one-way pathway to
now
good old Earth.
My other question is, are there aliens that sent the asteroid just to see what we would do?
So you're bringing in Starship Troopers.
Right, where they would go, looks like they have some technology we have to figure out.
Yeah, the insect planet used to throw hurl rocks at us.
Would you like to know more? That movie's,
you know,
funny.
I'm sorry, man. That's a great movie.
That movie, I know people, look, it's one of those movies when it's on, I go, what the hell?
Yeah.
What the hell? I'll watch it.
There's no redeeming value to this movie at all.
None at all. You know, Casper Van Dien,
but
God bless him.
From beginning all the way till the end when Neil Patrick Harris goes, it's scared.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. It's cheesy, but it's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun. All right, what's the bad of the day?
Bad of the day is, you know, you always want your head coach to have your back, right?
Right, I think.
Well, not if your head coach is Greg Popovich.
Yeah, Greg Popovich.
He pretty much came flat out and said to the media yesterday, don't anyone run to Vegas and put your money on us to win the national championship.
Well, there is a period of time where you can, I'd like to think in every profession, but I'm not 100% sure. There's a point in almost, I think in every profession where you've reached a point of success where you can say whatever you want,
yeah,
anytime you want, and no one's going to do anything about it.
I mean, we're not even caring, are we?
No.
Just came out and said, I mean, his team must feel so deflated at this point. Like, coach, you don't think we can win at all? I mean,
He's like, nope, not at all. You know what? We're going to go out there for 82 games and just see what happens, boys. That's it.
Yep.
God,
I'm hoping not to be dead last. How about you?
Yeah, exactly.
How about that?
Exactly. Oh, can I have to make a correction on this. I'm one of those guys that is willing to say when I was wrong. I mean, part of doing this job is to make opinions and make thoughts, and if you get them wrong, come out and say I was wrong.
Okay.
I was 100% wrong. I was wrong about Becky Hammon. I remember when she went to the WNBA, I said, kill her. Don't do it. Don't do it. You're your assistant coach on the Spurs bench. The league is taking assistant coaches and promoting them. If you want a job in the NBA, and I know you want that job, you said you want that job, you want to break the glass ceiling of being a female coach in the NBA, stay on the bench of Greg Popovich. But I was wrong. Her stock has gone through the roof since going. I mean, I know people don't have a lot of respect for the NBA, WNBA. I get it. But trust me, in basketball circles, she's shown that she can coach, like be a head coach.
Head coach, yeah.
She's not just holding a clipboard and being an assistant and whatever. She's devising schemes, running players in and out of the lineup, making adjustments, all of that. and she's raising a lot more awareness about her career. And I think she's on a better track to get into the NBA in the avenue that she chose. I thought it was career suicide, to be honest with you. I really did. I thought, you're going to go there. Nobody cares. It's not the most covered league we have in American sports. You're just going to disappear. But one of the ways you can set yourself apart is win a championship, and she did. So I was wrong about the Becky Hammon's career choice, but nevertheless, Popovich was happy for her.
Yeah,
so
no, but that's the thing too, right? I mean, what you just said, it's good for basketball circles, for public perception. I mean, most of us didn't even know the NBA finals wrapped up last week.
Not at all. But when you are in the circle of, when you're in the business, when you're in the belly of the beast, I think that her stock rose enough that there will be a team that down the road will do it.
Still could be the Spurs. I can see Popovich finally saying, I'm calling it a career. You want to know who to hire? That's my choice.
He has been her biggest fan of anybody in the country. He has said over and over again, even years ago, he said, that woman knows basketball. Everyone needs to be talking to her. And he basically said, get her in this league. Get her, sign her up. She is brilliant. She's smart. In the summer league, he let her coach it, and she won the championship of the summer league a couple years ago. So I was wrong about Becky Hammon's career choice. Anyway, Popovich, he's a weird guy, man. He's a weird guy. He does this. I think that Popovich, when he did that stuff with Craig Sager years and years ago, you know, when they would have this fun little banter where he would give one word answers and stuff, and they grew to this kind of neat little relationship. But he's an interesting cat, man. He really doesn't mind saying what's on his mind. He doesn't mind saying the truth. He comes out of it's very surly, and it throws a lot of people off because it's an old act. Belichick uses this too, right? Where he's above it all. He doesn't have time for your nonsense and whatnot. But I find him likable. It's a weird thing. I like him. I'm not enamored with him because he does stuff where I go, come on, man, you're too old to be being that surly. Right. But the thing with Belichick is I respect him as a coach, but I think he's full of crap. I honestly think he's full of crap when he's up there and he's doing that no days off stuff. And I don't know, FaceTime, InstaChat.
It's an act.
It's an act. He knows exactly what that stuff is. He may not know how to use it. He may not be proficient with it, but he knows what it is because he's reading that book about with Seth Wickersham. He's into everything everybody's doing. He wants to know what's going on with everybody. So again, he may not know how to work I don't know how to work Snapchat, but I know it. I know what it is. I know how important it is. He knows it. So he wants to play that. I don't have time for anything but X's and O's. Popovich is he just can be rude to be rude. But I don't know, there's something when he breaks out of that a bit, he's likable. I heard advice once, if you're going to interview Popovich, start by asking him about wine. He loves wine. He loves to talk wine. If you want to break the ice with him, ask him what's a good wine that goes with salmon or something. I don't know, pick something.
And what's he drinking today?
What's he drinking? What's he like? What's the latest what wine is making some news? He's a big wine connoisseur. That's the kind of advice I've heard when interviewing Popovich. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
Dumb of the day, I kind of have two.
Two? All right.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Because I don't know how to react to either. Well, one of them I have an opinion on, but the first one is Jerry Jones. It's either he's so rich or so old that he doesn't know how to take a selfie. People were having a lot of fun putting that on him. Now, if it's the I'm so rich part of it, yeah, I can see you making fun of it. But if it's the old part of it, it's like, you know what, man, give the guy a break.
Is his selfies don't work?
No, there was a viral video going around when he was at a Giants game, Giants Cowboys game yesterday, and he's down on the field and he's trying to take a selfie in front of some Cowboy fans, and he ended up having to have an assistant help him take it because he couldn't line it up.
Would
right.
you laugh at your grandmother if she tried
that's,
to do
that's
that?
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Like if your grandmother was trying to do a video and she couldn't, like at Christmas time. And she couldn't do it right. Would you make fun of grandma that she didn't know how to do it?
Yeah, and that's why I don't know if it's too old or too rich.
You know, he's so rich, he doesn't have to lift a finger for a selfie.
I don't know how to take a screenshot on my phone. My kids have to do it for me all the time.
Yeah.
Where I go, can you take a screenshot of this? He goes, Dad, just press these two buttons. I go, yeah, but one time I pressed a certain button and it asked me if I wanted to send an SOS.
Hmm.
I was like, I don't know what this thing does. So
did you send out an SOS?
I did once on a golf course. I was on a golf course and I was trying to turn my volume down on my phone because I was like, I realized my phone was at full thing and I wanted to be nice to the people I was playing golf with. And I was like, I'll turn it down. But I was doing it in my pocket. I wasn't taking the phone out and I was pressing so many buttons. And apparently I activated the SOS call and a cop showed up at the golf course and they called me and I had to convince them that it was a mistake. Yeah. Cause they're not just going to take my word for
right.
it. They're going to be like, are you sure? And I finally went, no, it's my phone. I don't know how to use my phone. I'm so sorry. Do you need me to come in? I'll leave. I'll come
see,
in and explain
this
myself.
Is exactly like, how no, I felt about that. And that kind of leads to the other one, too, which is the backlash, I guess, that Ken Dorsey is getting.
Right. Okay.
For blowing up during the Bills game. I mean, there's been some people's like, oh, you can't show that. I'm like, no, why not show that emotion?
I thought it was no big deal. I didn't think so either. I thought it was
I would wanted to see out of my coach. I mean, well, your coach gets frustrated.
Let's be careful here
it.
Because I don't want my coach to lose it so much that people get hurt by him throwing stuff. Like,
well, yeah.
I don't need him to trash the locker room and then we go, that's just passion, man. Like, but at the same time he didn't do that.
Yeah, right? He just crumpled up some papers, he slammed his notebook down, and I mean, you can see he was frustrated, and I get it. You know, it was I would be frustrated too.
I remember when I was working in minor league basketball, we had an assistant coach that threw his clipboard down, and his pen left the clipboard and hit one of our, you know, whatever we had, runners or whatever.
Yeah.
And he got like, the runner got like upset, and there was nothing we could do other than say, this is stuff happens. Like, I don't know what to tell you. These guys, this is what happened. Like, we're not trying to excuse it, but
was the runner holding his head, goes, he did it on purpose.
Yeah, right. He was running, like, stats to the bench, and the assistant coach wasn't mad at him. He was just mad somebody wasn't doing it. He just threw his clipboard down, and the pen jumped out of the clipboard and hit the guy. And it didn't hurt him. He was just mad that it was... Well, he was like, this is what they do.
A pen at me.
Like, that's an intense, stressful situation. It's incredibly stressful.
It is, like, especially in a game like that.
You're trying to get the plays in. You're trying to get, you have a vision of what it's supposed to look like. It's not looking out that way. They're running out of time. They didn't get out of bounds. They were supposed to get out of bounds. They don't have any more time on the clock. Like, Ken Dorsey set up that entire series, and then it was all for naught because they didn't get out of bounds. Like, you'd blow up, too. You may not throw stuff, but...
Yeah.
I don't want to get upset with that. I had no problems with it. I'm with you. I kind of thought, yeah, he takes this seriously, man.
Takes his job seriously. Oh, bother.
Yeah. And Ken Dorsey's a good dude. He's a part of those Miami National Championship teams. He's a good coach. So
he knows what he's doing.
He's up on Ken Dorsey.
Yeah. Didn't go his way.
That's
right. And against a division rival and the first place is on the line, you're going to be more hyped up for it.
Exactly. All right, good, the bad, and the dumb. LeVon Kirkland will join us at 40 past the hour. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, we got LeVon Kirkland coming up at 40 past the hour. You and I were just talking off the air about Joe Buck. I forget who was it, Bill Simmons or something like that, was talking about how great Joe Buck and Troy Aikman are. Let me just make this something clear here. People say, when Buck and Aikman are on these games, it feels so important. You know why it feels so important? Because for 20 years, they did the most important game their network had. That's how it worked. Because that's what you're accustomed to. You're not accustomed to Buck and Aikman doing Jacksonville-Houston when they were terrible. You're not accustomed to that. what you're accustomed to is those two guys were at the biggest game Fox Sports had that weekend. So they got their list of games. The best one with the best matchup, with the best potential, that's what Buck and Aikman had.
Unless it was Cowboys.
Right? Yeah.
It was like, oh, we're just going to send him to the Cowboys game again.
And that's why it feels important. It doesn't feel important because of them. It feels important because of what they've done for 20 years. It's the same thing with Nance and Romo. If Nance and Romo were on the Monday Night Football crew, you'd feel like that game was important too.
Yep.
Think about this. Summerall and Madden, right? These two guys were great together. Madden's one of the best color commentators in the history of the sport. But what made them so much bigger was the fact that they were the number one CBS team, and then they were the number one Fox team when they went over to the network. They did the best game they could. That's why I felt like when I think about the dominance of the NFC in the 80s, I think Pat Summerall and John Madden. I think those two guys being at the Meadowlands or Soldier Field or we're here at Candlestick. Like, I remember, like, the bigger games with Montana and the Bears and the Giants and the Cowboys and Washington and all these they were there.
I will say this, though, that, you know, whenever they cut to the studio and you would see Joe Buck and Troy Aikman doing their thing, there is something about Joe Buck calling games in the evening hours.
It is pretty cool. I mean, he's good. I will tell you,
I do
he's
like
really,
him.
Really, really good. I like him. I'm not a guy. I don't mute. I honestly believe that it became chic not to like Joe Buck, so people don't they don't like Joe Buck.
Definitely.
I don't think people really have a problem with your announcers. Right. It's one thing that I learned very early in this business when doing play by play. Unless you're doing it on the radio, like you got to do a good job, but people shouldn't be that emotional about what you're doing. They're seeing what you're seeing. You may not be great on it. You misidentify a player, you get called out, etc. But nevertheless, in the end, right, you are, you're just a vehicle. Like the game is the star, not you. You're not the star. The game is the star. When you're on radio, you're the eyes, right? You're the eyes. So that's a more intimate relationship between listener and content. But in TV, you can mute the sound and not listen to them and still watch the game and get an idea of what's going on. I don't think people, but I will say the criticism of Aikman is more legit than a criticism of a play-by-play guy. Because when you're Buck, you're calling play-by-play, you have a spotter that tells you who's made the, so when Buck says tackle made by Will Jones, somebody's pointing to Will Jones because he's got the binoculars. He's said he's watching for that. And he points to it. And that's what Buck sees. And he goes, okay, that's who made the tackle. Aikman's job is to give you an analysis. And I hate to do this, but he just seems to go back and forth with that was good or that wasn't good or that was impressive or that wasn't impressive without really any specific detail as to why that was. Do you hear a lot of Aikman saying, Joe, that was set up because they're in a zone defense. And because of that zone defense, the middle here is uncovered. And this is what he's seeing. He's seeing an opportunity here because this linebacker is going to shift this way. And he read that in pre-snap and as a pre-snap decision. And he knew that this linebacker has a tendency to go this way. And that left this middle open. I never hear him say something like that. Now, I might be missing it because I'm not, I may not be tuning in as
no,
tightly.
I don't think you are. But I don't think you're missing it.
I don't hear that very much. That's a good throw, Joe. That's a good throw. He made a good throw. Yeah, because it was complete and it was on the numbers. I think we can figure that out. But as far as just taking a play and going, you do not even begin to understand how Saquon Barkley found that hole. If it wasn't for this guard pulling these two defenders this way, that created this opportunity. He's getting millions and millions of dollars to go, that's just a great play, Joe. That's just, you can't make that play there. What, throwing it out of bounds on third and three? Yeah, I get it. I can figure that out. I'm not trying to be too critical here, but at the same time, yeah, I need more bang for my buck if I'm paying an analyst $10 million a year to tell me what I'm already obviously seeing.
is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Looking to get LeVon Kirkland on the show. Robert on Facebook, they have support staff and no games and will cover ahead of time. They should have ample historical and recent team stats to share during the game and make it more interesting and make us smarter about football. Yeah, I think that's what an analyst job is. I don't want to say that it's not laziness, I guess, but it I don't know. I don't know what it is where you should be getting a lot more information about the game, and we're tending not to get as much of that. If you're old enough to remember the first time Madden used the Telestrator, that little thing on where he was really showing us as he was drawing it out, it was really revolutionary because very few people had access to the kind of information about football that they had. I mean, there were books in the library and stuff like that, but if you were just a casual football fan, maybe played it in high school, there wasn't a way to see the game or really, really, really understand the real nuances of the game except through an analyst on TV. Now you can go on these websites. Everyone's got, you know, if you don't know what, the proper way to read an RPO, there's plenty of places to go do that. But analysts back in the day, that was the only way to do it. Let's go to our Progressive guest line, Progressive Insurance, making bundling home and auto easy. Learn more at progressive.com. Well, LeVon Kirkland joins us. He played for the Eagles. He played for Seattle, but you might remember him. 8 years with the Pittsburgh Steelers in the 90s, also a Clemson Tiger. He's up for the College Football Hall of Fame, and he joins us here on Sports Map Radio. How are you, sir?
I am doing very well. Thank you so much for asking.
I want to ask you this. You went to Lamar High School. I'm familiar with South Carolina a bit. I went to college there. I know Lamar. That's a small school. Back in the day, how did you get noticed for a school like Clemson, especially for a guy like Danny Ford?
Well, really, it happened by accident. We were playing a game. It was a playoff game, and we were playing this team in Columbia named Chapin. And there were some scouts, and my coach actually told me, hey, there's some scouts out there. And I was like, cool. I need to ball out. And that's kind of how it happened. I played really well in that playoff game. And they kind of like, okay, wow, we were here to see somebody else. But, man, we like what we see in number 44. And that's kind of how it got started.
I have to tell you, I did go to South Carolina. I was there your sophomore year at Clemson when you beat the Gamecocks 45-0. That was my first taste of Carolina Clemson football. I'm sure Dickie DeMacy still is scared of you. I just don't know if it's bygones be bygones, but that atmosphere is as electric as I tell people around the country. I think that is, it's maybe not Michigan, Ohio State, but it's as electric as any rivalry in college football.
Yeah, I mean, that's a true hate between South Carolina and Clemson. There's no doubt about that. And we take our football really seriously here in South Carolina. So when those two go against each other, man, we're out for blood. And we're out for bragging rights for 365 days. So you don't want the other team to win because you're going to have to hear that junk talk all year long. So, yeah, it's a fierce rivalry. It really is.
When you get to the NFL, you play for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and it's one of the more remarkable franchises in the NFL. And that in my lifetime, they've had three coaches, and that's it. And then mm-hmm. you played for one of them in Bill Cowher in the 90s. But you know a lot about the way this organization is structured. There's a lot of conversation now about the Steelers and how they go about their business, why they don't have losing seasons like 1-15 or 2-14. What did you notice about that organization that is still holding true today as they deal with a transition in quarterback or just the way they run their operations?
Yeah, I think there's some core values that they have that maybe other teams don't have. And there's a trust from the top to the bottom. The head coach and the owners, they really understand each other and they really work well together. And it's such a legacy there at Pittsburgh that when you come in, you know all about the history of the team. As a linebacker, you know all about the linebackers that come there. And so what happens is you really take ownership of being a Pittsburgh Steeler. Like, it really becomes a part of you, you know. And you just accept it. You embrace what they do. And I think that's the reason why it works so well.
How much did the old Steeler defense, the Steel Curtain of the 70s, how much did you see of them? How much did they talk to you? Is there a brotherhood of defensive players within the Steeler organization?
I really believe so. When I was there, I would see Jack Hamm. I would see Mel Blunt. I would see Jack Lambert. All those guys would come back and just kind of be in the locker room. I mean, of course, because they won 4 titles, so they can pretty much do what they want to. They can walk around as much as they want to. But I thought it was really neat that I got to talk to Jack Hamm, you know, on occasions, or see guys like Franco Harris, John Stallworth. I thought it was really cool for a player like myself to see those guys, just to really see the example that they set and to really talk to them and get a feel about what it's like to play with the Pittsburgh Steelers. So, yeah, they did come around, and I thought it was really great. I really did.
What are your memories of Super Bowl 30? I mean, it's a loss, but it is a loss in which the Steeler defense was fantastic. I mean, it held Emmitt Smith. They controlled, I mean, as much of that game as you could. People look at the Dallas Cowboys and they go, yeah, 3 Super Bowls in 4 years. You probably gave them the best shot of any of the teams that they had, the 2 against the Bills and then the 1 you had in Super Bowl 30.
Yeah, that game really helped me as a linebacker. I remember Matt Millen telling me before the game that he thought I was the dark horse of the defense. And he basically told me that I was seeing the right things, but I wasn't really trusting what I saw. So he told me to start trusting my eyes. And that was really one of the first games as a professional that I trust everything I saw. And that propelled me to being like a 2-time Pro Bowler, you know, linebacker of the year. I remember the loss, and the loss was really devastating, but I learned a lot from that game. And it was just really great to be a part of the Super Bowl. But, yeah, I remember Matt Millen just giving me a personal talk about how good of a player I was.
When you talk about your time there, I always kind of talk about athletes and teams, and I always, in my time covering teams, there was always whenever you get a disappointing season, there's always a feeling like we have all the pieces and let's just get back to where we just left off and let's finish the deal. What was the feeling going into that season after the disappointing loss to San Diego at home when everybody sort of was coronating the Steelers as the best team in the AFC, home field advantage, here's this Charger team that's just kind of making its way through the wild card round, lose that game? How much of that next season was, let's get back to where we just left off and finish the deal?
Yeah, I think a lot of times you can learn from losing. You know, you either win or you learn. And I felt like, you know, we were so cocky that year. And we should have been. I mean, we're really a great team. And I think actually that team was maybe a little better than the team that actually went to the Super Bowl. But the team that went to the Super Bowl, the thing was, we didn't start off well. We actually went 3-4. And Coach Coward kind of told us to erase the 3-4 that we were starting over. And we really got focused. But the cool thing, too, was we really started hanging out as a team. We became closer. We went out to dinners. We did paintball together. We did a lot of things together as a team. So I think getting to know guys besides teammates and really get to know them and befriend them really helped us get to that next level. So I think that we came back with a little bit more focus. And also we build relationships and we start caring for each other.
What is the way you see the NFL today? I mean, how do you see the defenses today? This is an orient, they oriented towards offense so much, but how do you see players that play your position or even not so much your position, the way they play the defense?
Well, I think it's a lot different. You know, I think that the game is spread out. I think that the middle of the field is not the defense anymore. It's really the offense. You know, there are certain things that you can't do. I think that in a lot of ways, we have lost the art of defense. And what I mean by that is, you know, at one point in time, you can hit the quarterback a little late after he throws the ball. And it wasn't a penalty, but it was a message to the quarterback that we're going to come and hit you all day. And that would affect them as the game went on. And in the fourth quarter, you kind of got them in your own hands. Or you can intimidate a receiver coming across the middle by giving him a little bit of attack. So I think in a lot of ways, athletes are better. I think, you know, these guys are, they're well-trained. I think that they are fundamentally sound. I mean, I think all of that. I praise the athletes. I think they're excellent. I think maybe we were a little tougher because the game was a little tougher. And, you know, it was more inside the box, a little bit more hitting. Training camps were a little tougher. So I think that we had more of a tough mindset and we were tougher people. But I think the game now, I think the athletes are amazing. I think that these guys are just strong. They're tall. They're big. They can run. It's amazing, but I think the game of football has taken away the art of defense.
Yeah, and also, how do you see the way that the league has adapted to players, especially veteran players? Do you wish that some of the stuff that they did in terms of safety protocols was enacted when you were around? Is it a little too late? I mean, how do you see the way that they've had to adapt to concerns that players have had?
Well, I think they've been proactive as far as, well, you know, I think nowadays they're a little bit more proactive because of all the concussions and things that have happened to players in the past. I remember getting dinged up in the head and it was, I get to the sideline, they're asking me where I'm at, you know, how many fingers I got up, and I'm like, it's not amnesia, I just got a really big headache, you know, like, so I think that, you know, the information, just like with anything, the information is a lot better. And you can't really just hide things anymore. You can't, because everybody has a telephone. Everybody has a camera. So you just can't hide it anymore. You really can't. And I think that's better for the players. I think that they understand that without the players in the league isn't much. So they need to take care of their product. So I feel that they do a better job. I think we just didn't know a lot back then. I just think that we just didn't have information. Players weren't provided information. We just kind of, you know, we were just soldiers. You know, we were about the team. We're loyal. We put ourselves on the line because, you know, we've been taught that since we were kids. So now, I think now the players are, you know, they understand that if they are a brand, they have a lot more power, and that you can't get away with things you used to as a organization.
Levon Kirkland again, thanks so much for joining us. Best of luck in the College Football Hall of Fame voting. I know that's going to be, what, December, I think, when they announce the class?
It's going to be in December. Thank you so much. You
Absolutely.
Know, I appreciate being nominated for it. I really hope that whoever gets in, that they really cherish it, because I think that's a big deal. So thank you so much for
of course.
Saying
that.
I
wish you all
it.
The best, my friend. I love watching you as a Steeler. Maybe not so much as a Clemson Tiger. You gave me some nightmares. But nevertheless, as a Steeler, you're fantastic. Levon Kirkland, you were one of the best. I appreciate your time.
Man, thank you so much for having me on.
You got it. Levon Kirkland joining us on a Progressive Guest Line, talking his career. Yeah, again, Lamar High School is a small high school. That's why I asked him right off the bat. I know that school. It's a small school. And back then, today, players can get their film. They can send it out. I mean, you could still do that back in the day, but it's so much easier now with, you know, editing software and things like that. Guys are making great highlight tapes just to get on the radar of coaches, just to say, hey, this is what I'm doing. Here's some clips. And then next thing, you know, there's some scouts, but you got to really hope that there's alignment, there's conversation about you, the right people are listening to those conversations with you, and these scouts that are going around to these even smaller schools like Lamar High School found Levon Kirkland, and he had a fantastic college career at Clemson and a fantastic career in the NFL. All right, we'll come back. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks to Levon Kirkland, former Steeler great. And I bring up Clemson Tiger, even though You know, he really terrorized. He terrorized Dickie DeMacy at quarterback, and then there was Mike Fuller that was a quarterback. I know, useless information, but that's what I'm here for. You want to know what else useless information? I didn't get this question in. I was going to ask him. I don't know if he was on the field or not, because it was one of those plays where you might not need a linebacker. You might just need more defensive backs because it was the last play of the game. But the Steelers had lost to the Chargers in the AFC Championship game with Stan Humphries and Natron Means and Junior Seau the year before, as I mentioned, where he, you know, that was a really good Steeler team. And they lost at home. Everybody, they were highly favored, should have won that game, didn't win that game. And the Chargers went to Super Bowl 29. The next year in the AFC Championship game, same thing, right? They were in the same exact spot. They were at home, good enough record to host the championship game, and they were playing Jim Harbaugh and the Indianapolis Colts. And like the Chargers before, the Colts kept the game really tight. And I wanted to ask him, where was he and what was he thinking? Because at the last play of the game, Harbaugh threw a Hail Mary into the end zone. And it's one of those moments that if you're a Steeler fan, you go, I can't breathe. I can't. The ball's in the air. It's heading to the end zone. You're like, I can't. They're not going to lose back-to-back AFC Championship games at home, are they? And the ball landed in Aaron Bailey's chest while he was on the ground, and then it rolled off, and it was incomplete, and the Steelers won the game. But I just was. I wish I could have asked him, what were your thoughts in the second? Like this, it was in the air, and it's heading down, and there's a receiver there, and he's ready to catch it. He was in position to catch it, and he fell back, and it was only I can't, unless you were there, experience again, I can't tell you the just pause of time that the universe gave you.